The music. There we go. If you have any questions, since we are recording this online, please make sure that you ask them into the mic, which is at that table right there. So I'll be talking about a college-level learning framework for assessing open educational resources, but it has many more applications, hopefully, than that. So a little bit about SUNY Empire State College, where I'm from. It's a part of the state system, the State University of New York. The SUNY system has about 64 locations altogether. On top of that, SUNY Empire actually has 34 additional locations spread throughout the state. So we cover a wide range of students. We're mostly focused on the adult learner. For our undergrad students, the average age is about 35. And we have about 20,000 students altogether. About half of that is online. So we have about 10,000 students who do their classes online. The other half do more traditional face-to-face or independent study models. And we also have an open curriculum. So instead of having siloed, you know, math department and a social studies department and a history department, we actually have what are called area of studies. We have 12 area of studies. And our curriculum is very individualized. Students work together with their mentor to design a degree program. It's actually a course they take. And in it, they can include things like transfer credit and prior learning assessment. And we don't have many traditional courses like Psych 101, more so in our Center for Distance Learning or online. But students are free to develop their own courses as well. And instead of creating sort of a traditional degree where they might take Psych 101, Psych 202, stats class, students are able to create their own classes that are much more interdisciplinary. And we also have a huge tradition of prior learning assessment. We've been doing it for 40 years. And at any one time, we have about 4,000 to 5,000 students going through the prior learning assessment on our campus. So that's sort of where Nan and I come from in terms of this project. It's a little background information to help you sort of sort out where we are. Do any of your institutions do portfolio-based prior learning assessment? If I could just see a show of hands. So not a lot of you. That's okay. I'm just asking this question as a frame of reference. The framework can be used for many more things than just prior learning assessment, but it's a good frame of reference. So one thing we were struggling with in our institution and throughout the country is how to recognize university-level learning for all different kinds of learning. So it might be learning that happens online through an open educational resource. A student takes this open educational resource. How are you really sure what they're learning is college level? Especially since there may or may not be an instructor involved, there may or may not be assessments. Then there's also a lot of untethered learning, and by that we mean learning that's not necessarily tethered to the institution. It might be in the community, might be through work experience, so sort of your informal, non-formal learning. And then there's also a lot of self-authored learning paths that are happening, where a student might start in a MOOC, they might do a couple of assignments in there, and then they might drift out or in of a bunch of open online resources. So there are a lot of non-traditional learning paths that are happening. And we noticed that there was a huge demand for being able to recognize what these students were doing. We also wanted to start developing an assessment tool that focuses on learning as it develops, as opposed to just recognizing learning after you're done with the course, or after you're done with the OER, or after you're done with the work experience. So instead of calling it prior learning assessment, it's more emergent learning assessment. And the same for courses. A lot of students develop their learning as they're going through an OER, not just at the very end. And we wanted something that can be used by all constituents, from students all the way to faculty members, something that's very accessible for everyone and very transparent. And we also wanted to create some form of learning assessment that uses ePortfolios. They're a really great technological tool that can document the learning that happens inside or outside of the classroom, but it's especially great for that untethered learning where a student may or may not have a professor to keep track of these assignments. And so what we were hoping to do is to recognize university-level learning as a primary assessment. Before any type of content-specific assessment, one of the issues with a lot of emergent learning is that it's so emergent. Sometimes faculty don't even know what's happening currently in the field. We find this a lot with our learners because they tend to be a little older and they have work experience in brand new fields and brand new technologies. So we want to recognize that emergent learning just as much as any previous, you know, founded knowledge already that's in the college or university. Our faculty at Empire often say they learn so much from students during the prior learning assessment process. So that's one reason I brought up prior learning assessment, is we have a great deal of this knowledge behind us and we're trying to move it into this project as well. One reason we keep calling it college versus university level learning, when we were doing a lot of international research, there's a big difference between what the international community considers college or university. College tends to be the first 2 years in most countries, and so we started using university level learning instead, but then throughout conferences people kept saying, well, does that mean you're not including college? So I'm going to use them interchangeably here, but we're looking at both college and university level learning. And then the topic assessment is integrated rather than the key goal. So one of the other things we were noticing in a lot of learning is a student might get all the way through an OER, they might get all the way through a MOOC, they might get all the way through a prior learning assessment, and then find out, yeah, they learned a lot of really topics specific knowledge, but they actually didn't learn anything college level. So we want to address that up front before the student goes through all the work to make sure what they're learning can actually receive credit. We also wanted to create a tool that's scalable and easy to use. A lot of students, like I said earlier, who are using OERs don't necessarily have an instructor or an institution behind them, so you need something that's really easy for a student to use. And we wanted to create something that's content agnostic, or something you can use no matter what subject you're studying, math, history, IT, anything. So we ended up receiving a Lumina Foundation grant. And the goal was in two different phases. In the first year, we were to develop this assessment tool that will help us look at what is university level learning. And we researched a ton of international policies and practices, and we've drafted the framework. We drafted the framework with the help of a great academic team of Empire State College and faculty from across the state, and they all are in different content areas. We have some in science, some in math, some in statistics, some in humanities, some in language arts, some in cultural science, some in psychology. So we really tried to bring a great group of people together. And we also have an expert panel of experts from around the nation focusing on both OERs and prior learning assessment. Again, we're using prior learning assessment a lot because it has a lot of the practices and policies already well researched for any type of learning assessment, so we're using a lot of those policies and practices. In the second year, which we have started barely to begin, we're going to be looking at six Saylor OERs. They call them courses, Saylor, but they're not the traditional courses. They don't have instructor in there. There really isn't a cohort of students that works their way through a course. It's mostly a collection of open educational materials. So we've been calling them Saylor OERs instead of courses. Two humanities, two STEM, one IT, and one social science. So we'll be recruiting students from those six courses, but we're not going to be assessing the courses. We're going to be assessing the student learning that develops. Again, because we know students take in a lot of outside information besides just what's in the OER. And we're also going to be piloting it in our own with our own matriculated students as well. And then we've also had a couple of interests in piloting this with using it to build a degree or build competencies. And so we're looking for anyone else who would like to pilot the framework as well. And then we'll be openly sharing the framework and all of the research with a CC BY license so anyone can use or adapt it as they see fit for their college or university. So supporting research that went into developing the framework. We started heavily researching the different frameworks that are in the United States. One is the Lumina Degree Qualifications Profile, which a lot of institutions here may or may not be familiar with. There's a lot of great work in aligning colleges. They're both their mission statements and their degree plans with the DQP, so we integrated that very heavily. Also the ACCNU LEAP Essential Outcomes and Value Rubrics. And then the biggest part of our research was actually looking at qualification frameworks from across the world. We're one of the few countries, in fact, that doesn't have a national qualification framework. Most of the European countries have both their own, and then they use what's called the EQF, or the European Qualification Framework. And it really helps mobility between countries. There's even a website where you can see if you got a degree in France, what would that translate if I moved to a different country, say Germany, you know, what would the equivalent be? And they tend to be broken up into skills, knowledge, and competencies. So the list for every single level, often covering upper high school all the way to doctoral level, but some even cover primary and secondary education as well. They're also sometimes split into international and transnational, so the Commonwealth countries have their own framework, and Southern Africa has its own framework as well. And some institutions and colleges have also been very incorporated into these frameworks. So there are a lot of different voices that have gone into these frameworks. Some labor institutions have gone into the discussion to create these frameworks, and non-for-profits. For example, in Chile, they have a very big mining community, so if you look at any of their frameworks, you'll notice that there's a big, heavy emphasis on manufacturing and the skills sort of related to that sector. In the United Arab Emirates, they have a big focus on ethical responsibility and social cultural engagement because there's so much diversity in that area, and so they have a little bit of a different focus. In Southern Africa, they have a huge focus on literacy. So depending on the region, they have a slightly different focus, but most countries besides the United States actually have a framework. We also did some additional research related to outcome assessment and competency-based learning as well. And then I quickly glossed over that a lot of the high school, a lot of the frameworks include both the high school and the master's level. For this project, we only looked at those 4 years we consider a bachelor's degree, but we did look at the high school level and the master's level so we could sort of see what was in between. And then vocational training is extremely important in a lot of countries, including Australia and New Zealand. And so a lot of those ideas are in there as well. And so we sort of did a meta-analysis of all of these frameworks to come up with our own framework. And so we're calling it the Global Learning Qualifications Framework, the qualifications framework part, because that's sort of the tradition that's happening across the world. And in terms of global learning, we wanted to sort of cover all of our bases and not just restrict it to one content area. And our framework has several different audiences. One of the things we noticed when we were looking at these 90 frameworks, and even the DQP and the ACCNU value rubrics, it tends to be very academic. So if a student would say, wondering, you know, what qualification do I have? How does it apply? How do I move it around? It's very, very, very hard for them to understand. And so we wanted multiple audiences, a student audience, a faculty audience, and we also looked at different components for faculty. Advisors, what would curriculum trainers and curriculum developers, what would they need? And instructors, instructional designers, and then prior learning evaluators. We looked at a bunch of different audiences and really want the framework to work for all of them. We also wanted to create a framework where there are differing proportions of knowledge with and across each area, so it's okay to have a little more specialized knowledge and a little less communication. And when I show you later, you'll be able to see sort of the bigger and smaller circles more visually. You'll be able to see this represented. We also wanted an adaptable assessment so that it recognizes learning in any context. So you can really use it in the classroom, you can use it to define a degree program, you can use it to do prior learning assessment. Again, that university-level learning assessed prior to the topic. It addresses different audiences' needs, and it captures the learning story through multimedia and interactive platform, i.e. e-portfolios. One of the things that kept coming up is at conferences was that the learner's story was really important, so we ended up putting the learner in the center because of that. So we gathered all of this data, and then we broke it into different clusters and themes. We have some great pictures of our faculty on the floor with all of the different knowledge, skills, and competencies, and organizing them into different clusters. And we ended up creating several different levels. First, the overarching constructs, then learning domains, then descriptors at both an introductory and advanced level, student prompts, and examples of evidence. So this is a graphical representation of what our framework looks like. There are many more sections layered underneath it, but it's the main image of our framework. So you'll notice around the edge are the overarching constructs of knowledge, meta-literacy, and engagement. And those are mostly situated around the learning domains, which are the circles, that they're most associated with, but you'll notice that there are arrows. So there are knowledge, and there is knowledge and communication, obviously. You need meta-literacy to apply knowledge. So those that ring around also rotates. And then in the center, you'll see the 8 learning domains. And so again, you have the 3 overarching constructs, and then our 8 learning domains. They articulate the overarching constructs, and they intersect with each other through the learner. So we wanted to make sure that they all overlap a little. It's hard to have specialized knowledge and not also apply it. You can't really separate those two. And they all intersect with between and within that learner. The learner's in the center. It's the integral part. And there are different proportions of each depending on the topic, and I can show you examples of this here. So you'll notice that some of the circles are bigger or smaller depending on what topic there might be. So this might be a social science student, someone who's dealing with psychology or social work, and they still have a lot of specialized knowledge, but they might have a ton of social cultural engagement or ethical responsibility. And one thing we noticed with these circles too is that this also might be a diagnostic tool. So you might take a snapshot of a student coming in and say, well, this is what they sort of have now. Maybe through the course of this class or this degree or this prior learning assessment, we need to focus on some of the other areas and really grow them out. So this is one example. Here's another example. So this might be a math or IT student where they have a lot of specialized knowledge, but they haven't really used a lot in ethical responsibility. Of course, hopefully, they still have some, but they might have only a little. And so just a quick example of how, you know, each of these might go into building a degree. So if you had a doctor, for example, of course they'd have a lot of specialized knowledge, and they might be doing an operation on a liver, for example. You'd also want them to be able to apply that knowledge. So not only do they know all the functions of the liver, but they also know how to physically operate on you. And then for integrated knowledge, so maybe there's a new technique that they learned by operating on a heart, but it really works for the liver. So they are able to take that knowledge from a different, slightly different subject area and really apply it to your liver to save your life. And then there's also communication. Communication is hugely important. It's not just good enough for them to be able to actually perform surgery, but actually explain what's happening to the other members of their team in the room at the time, and to be able to record what they did on your chart. And then you also have information literacy. So if something went wrong, or they were preparing for something that they didn't quite know enough about, you'd really want that doctor to be able to go and look up more information about it. It wouldn't be good enough for them to just have that limited scope of knowledge that they might have learned through their doctoral program, but they also need to be able to look up what new techniques they are on the computer and do some research. They also should have ethical responsibility. We all have our doctors do the Hippocratic Oath, of course, so you definitely want some ethical responsibility in there too. Social cultural engagement deals a lot with managing people and responding to other cultures, so there might be people in the room that they need to manage, like an anesthesiologist, for example, or nurses. They need to respectfully work with other people as well. And they also need to be able to self-regulate their learning. So they need to know, maybe I'm not quite good enough with the liver, maybe I need to call in someone else to help me, maybe I need to work on my response time, do I know enough about this subject to be able to do a good job or not, do I need to work on some more learning goals. So that's really focused on self-regulated learning. So that's a little example. And if you could raise your hand to this one too, and I'm sorry, online audience, we don't have a poll for you, but have you ever created a portfolio, either written or an e-portfolio, to document your learning before? So a few people. It's a really hard process to try to document your learning. If someone just said, what do you know about computers? What would you do? How would you show that? And that's sometimes what we ask our students to do, especially in prior learning. We say, well, just write down what you know about a topic. That's very, very hard. Even essays sometimes, we might say, well, write what you know about the liver. How do you start? So one of the things that we also wanted to do is make sure that we flip the model so students can really start at that more granular level and ask them sort of probes and prodding questions to help them get at what they're learning. So we did notice that from the academic side, it's great to talk about specialized knowledge, it's great to say the word applied knowledge, but say to a student, tell me how you communicate or tell me what specialized knowledge you have, it's not gonna help them at all. And so for the student side, we ended up also developing prompts and a worksheet and then examples of evidence. So we ended up creating two different sides for this. As I mentioned earlier, the QS tended to only have that really high academic side, and so it was not transparent at all for students. And in an age of transparency, we want to make it really clear what we're expecting of students and how they'll be assessed. So in the blue, you'll notice that that's more the academic side for evaluators, advisors, anyone who's doing curriculum design. It's transparent to the learner, but it's not the first thing they see, so not to overwhelm them. And here we have descriptors. And we stayed away from the words outcomes and competencies very specifically because everyone's using them in their own way and everyone has slightly different interpretations for those words. So we use instead descriptors, which a lot of the QFs use, and it's really describing the outcomes. And we had them both at the introductory level and advanced level. Another thing that's really, really hard for people is trying to figure out, you know, what's really those first 2 years of a bachelor's degree and what's really those third and fourth years. What's different between the top of an associate's degree and the bottom of that third year of a bachelor's degree? What differentiates the two? So we have them broken up into introductory and advanced level. We also want to focus a lot on evidence. Constantly focusing on evidence here, that's why we want to use an e-portfolio. So it's not enough just to write the learning narrative, but we also want, if you are a sculptor, give us a picture of what you've created. If you're a ballet dancer, we want you to have the opportunity to do a video of you dancing to see your technique. And that's, again, broken up into introductory level and advanced level. For the learner side, we wanted to go at it a little bit differently. So we designed descriptor prompts. So they're very closely related to the descriptors, but they're questions, sort of poke at students. So if you had a student sitting in front of you and you wanted to know what they learned in your class, you might ask them questions and then ask them more and more difficult questions or ask them more and more specific questions. And that's what we wanted to get at here. So what do you know about the liver? All right, so how does it function? So how does the blood interact with that? And just keep building down to more and more specific questions. Our framework isn't content specific, so none of the questions have the, you know, what does the liver do, but it's completely adaptable, so if you wanted to change it to content specific, you could. We also have evidence prompts as well to guide students to say what kind of evidence would you need in an e-portfolio system. So here's an example. We have a lot of descriptors and prompts, and I didn't want to bore you with the many pages that it would take to go through all of them, but here's an example of communication. So the evaluator faculty member might see or might put into their course, identifies an appropriate mode of delivery based on the purpose of communication and the intended audience. So that's something I think we want all students to do, to be able to say, do I want to present this in a PowerPoint? Do I want to put it on a poster? Do I want to put it on a blog? What's really the best way to share this information? So evidence has examples of presentations given to a variety of audiences, maybe in a variety of modes as well. And to get the student at this, there's several prompts. How have I shared this information with others around the topic? So that's pretty general. That might get at, you know, some surface level. What types of reports or presentations have I prepared to share information about this topic? That's getting to a little more specific, a little more evidence-driven, and then it keeps drilling down. And even for those people who might not have taught, what ways might I frame my knowledge? So there are a lot of different frameworks out there to both look at university-level learning and prior learning assessment and ways of developing your courses and ways of choosing outcomes and competencies. So how is this global learning qualification framework unique? Well, one way it's unique is that we really did a comprehensive study. We honestly looked at every country that had a qualifications framework. And there were two countries that we couldn't find an English translation of, Russia and Greece, so they were admitted. But basically every other country we looked at. So it is much more comprehensive than some of the other models out there. We also developed a student and academic side. So again, lots of transparency and lots of accessibility. Questions to help students through the process. We're focusing on an open e-portfolio, and I'll show you that on the next slide, sort of what our dream is in terms of that. And once students develop an e-portfolio to have their learning assessed, either if it's prior learning assessment or they go through these OERs and decide to have their emergent learning assessed, we want to create an open e-portfolio where students can take their learning and then have it assessed at any institution. So the portfolio development might be a good start and it might be open, but then they'd have to pay for the assessment down the line if they wanted to. And SUNY Real is one method for that. It's part of Open SUNY underneath the SUNY network. It stands for Recognition of Experiential and Authentic Learning. And that might be a really great way for students to have their learning assessed. So one thing we've noticed too with e-portfolio systems is that they're not very helpful for those students who don't really know what they're doing. And so we created sort of a demo WordPress site of what we'd like to see in the future. We're really looking for an adaptive e-portfolio where students might start out with questions like, what have I done? I mean, that's a very basic question. But they could click on this link or once they write their response in the little box, their response would prompt a certain set of additional questions and keep moving them forward through this whole process. So what do I know about this area, specialized knowledge? So when they type their response, they might be led to another set of questions here. This is just the definition in a more student-friendly form. And then there might be more questions behind that. And as they go through this process, they would also be building the e-portfolio behind the scenes, so all of the responses would start being fed into this e-portfolio, so they'd have somewhere to start. So that's sort of our dream in terms of an e-portfolio system. So our next steps, the focus group at Empire State College, the pilot of Sailor students, and then also to create this e-portfolio learning environment. We need hopefully some help with technology and adaptive learning as well. We also want to communicate and disseminate all of this information out as widely as possible and to get as many voices in as possible as well. And then sustainability. So anyone who wants to use this framework, as long as you share what you've used it for and any results back to us, we're more than happy to help you use it and sustain this project. So I don't think we have enough time for this. Here's my contact information. And are there any questions? Yes. Oh, wait, we have to use the mic, right? No, that's okay.
So my question is, do you use this framework to evaluate an entire degree, or is it just typically one or two courses that a student will have prior learning and then they complete their degree at your school?
So we're not currently using it at Empire. But we have gotten interest at other colleges to use it to build a degree. So one of the ways that we've sort of conceptualized this is a student may take a course, and this might be their profile after taking that course. And then they might take another course, and this might be what that course has to offer. And it would start layering on top of each other, so by the end of time in their degree, they'd actually grow in all of the areas. So we have some interest in people using it for degrees or outcomes in terms of their whole experience at a college, but that's really up to the institution and what level they want to use it. Hopefully it can be used for both building courses and degrees. Any other questions?
Audience, the online audience wanted to know if they can access this website that you showed us.
We don't have a website up right now. Probably in the spring we'll have something. The WordPress site I showed you is very, very conceptual, and it was just our way of showing ePortfolio providers. But we do have a one-page handout that I at the table by the door, and then also if anyone wants to email me, I can send this one-page handout. And it also has all of the definitions for each of the learning domains as well, and the example of communication that I used. And then we'll keep you in the loop as it develops further. Okay, so I didn't do the activity, but does anyone have any ideas for how this might be used at your institution, or ways that we could sort of adapt it to use it at your institution, whether designing courses or helping faculty conceptualize what kinds of knowledge a student brings in diagnostically or building a degree? Is anyone using any framework right now? The DQP? No.
Okay. Could you mention your email so users can email you?
There you go. It's amy.mcquig@esc.edu.
Thank you very much for your time, and really enjoyed this session.
Thank you.